you're here. Fellowship's sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you.
Reading from Psalm 13, verse 3. Answer me, O my God, give light in my darkness, lest I die. Psalm 13, verse 3. O magnify the Lord with me, let us exalt his name together. It's Tuesday, November 19th, 2024. We continue with our series, How to Get Through What You're Going Through. This is part 6. We've looked at shock, sorrow, struggle, surrender, sanctification, and today we're going to have Kay Warren, wife to Pastor Rick Warren of Saddleback Church, share on finding treasure in darkness. All these Markin friends that are part of the series, How to Get Through What You're Going Through, can be accessed anytime and are archived at greatnewsradio.org, also WLUJ.org. Here's Kay Warren with a quick summary from last week, and we'll talk about finding treasure in darkness.
Last week, Rick spoke from Rwanda, and he talked about how our lives can be transformed by the troubles that we go through, how God uses the trials and the sorrows and all the hard times to smooth off the rough edges of our lives and make us more like Jesus Christ. This week, we're going to be talking about finding treasures of darkness, and I want to start by telling you something about myself, and it's this. I have always been afraid of the dark. I mean, like, always. And I don't mean just a little bit of scared, a little bit afraid. I mean, like, massively terrified by the darkness and something that I would avoid at all costs. Bad things come out of the dark. Okay, there are bad guys in the dark. There's robbers and there's thieves and there's kidnappers and, you know, it's very little girlish. And also monsters. I fully admit to being afraid of monsters my whole life. I don't know if any of you remember the crawling hand movie, like from the 5th. I am still afraid of that. It is, and I looked at it on the internet the other day just to see why it was so scary. It is so ridiculous. It's so cheesy. It is, you know, you look at it and you laugh. But let me tell you, as a little girl, that crawling hand that would come out of closets and jump on people terrified me. So I've really always been afraid of the dark, and it didn't help that I'm also very nearsighted. So if you're nearsighted and then you're in the dark, you can't really tell what you're looking at. So, you know, the chair looks like somebody standing there waiting to come after you. The lamp looks like somebody standing there watching you. And I have just creeped myself out more times than I can imagine just by my imagination because I can't see. And so I am an absolute light fanatic. Absolutely light fanatic. I never turn all the lights off in my house. Never. If you go into my house at night, there's always going to be at least one light on. It's why I get really annoyed with Rick if I come in at night and there is no light on in the house. This is like a major fight waiting to happen. And I always have a flashlight nearby. Well, maybe more than one. I have at least two by my bedside. I have one in the bathroom because, you know, if you get up at night and you don't want to stumble over anything, so I got a little one in the bathroom. I have one on my keychain. I've got a couple in my car. And I have one in my purse. And thank God for my cell phone because I've always got light, all right, with my cell phone. Okay, so now that I'm feeling really strange and ridiculous, how many of you know what I'm talking about? Okay, you need light. You don't like the dark. Thank you. Thank you. Okay, I'm not totally psychotic. All right. But I almost feel as strongly about emotional darkness. Emotional darkness is also incredibly uncomfortable to me. And when I am emotionally in darkness, my vision gets just as distorted. And I have as hard a time making out what's going on in my life when I'm in the darkness emotionally as I do when I'm in that physical darkness. That's why depression has always been so problematic and bothersome for me at various times in my life, because that depression becomes darkness and it threatens to overtake my mind and my thoughts. And it feels terrible. And then you add painful circumstances to emotional darkness. And before long, if we're not careful, we can find ourselves in very dark places. Again, anybody know what I'm talking about? Am I the only one who struggles? Thank you for those honest folks who are willing to say, I know what some of that darkness feels like. A few years ago, when our son Matthew's darkness and depression began to really deepen and he and his thoughts of taking his life began to increase in frequency, There were a lot of sleepless nights. And there was one night in 2009, as I was up late, fearful at the things that I thought he was thinking, the things that he was saying, how helpless I felt to do anything to make any difference in his depression. I had exhausted every possibility I knew, and I was feeling very, very frightened by this darkness that felt like it was encroaching on him and encroaching upon our lives. And so I went to my computer, and I have this amazing computer program that lets me look at all the Bible, the books of the Bible, and all the verses if I put them in the right way. And so I put in the words dark and darkness in this Bible computer program. And within a few minutes, I had 20 pages of verses that talked about dark and darkness. And I was reading verses like this. I started in Genesis and just made my way through the Bible. And I came across verses like this, 2 Samuel 22:12, talking about God. He wrapped himself in a trench coat of black rain cloud darkness. And as I sat in my home study feeling those storm clouds of darkness and not being able to find God, that's exactly what I said as I read it. Yes, God, where are you? It feels like you've wrapped yourself in a trench coat of darkness and I can't see you. And then I kept reading and I came to Job 19:8. And it says, God has blocked my path and turned my light to darkness. Another translation, another version says, God has put this impassable wall across my path and I feel trapped. And as I sat there, I was going, yes, God, it feels like you've just, not only have you hidden yourself in this trench coat of darkness and I can't find you, but you've put this wall across our paths and I can't get past it. And I'm in such darkness. And then Psalm, I kept flipping and I got to Psalm 13:3. It says, answer me, O Lord, my God, give me light in my darkness, lest I die. That's exactly the way I felt, that the darkness was so deep. It was so profound. It was so massive that I didn't know what to do with it. I felt like he had hidden himself, like there was, that he was intentionally almost playing a game with me. Here I was crying out to him and I couldn't find him. I couldn't find any answers. I couldn't find any help. And I was begging for God to show himself to me. And I kept reading. And then I came to Isaiah 45, verse 3. And this verse was so startling that I gasped aloud as I read it. It says this, God speaking, I will give you the treasures of darkness, riches hidden in secret places, so that you may know that I am the Lord, the God of Israel, who summons you by name. Now, I had three instant reactions to that verse. The first one was, I don't want to be in the darkness. I don't want to be in the darkness. I don't care what's in the darkness. Get me out of the darkness. Please get me out. Get my son out of this darkness. And then right on the heels of that was the next thought. Are there really treasures in the darkness? Are there really treasures that are hidden in the darkness? And then my third thought was, if there are, I don't want them. Thank you very much. Because it means I'm probably only going to find them in the darkness. And go back to point one. I don't want to be in the darkness. So God, what is you trying to say to me? Well, let me tell you the context of this verse. In Isaiah, the Israelites have been in captivity. And there is a Gentile, a non-Jewish king named Cyrus the Great. And God says that he's going to use this non-Jewish king to deliver the Israelites from their captivity to the Babylonians. And in chapter 45, where we're reading from, God talks and he gives this prophecy through the prophet Isaiah of what was going to happen and how he was going to use Cyrus. And he says that Cyrus is going to be very wealthy, that he's going to find treasures in the darkness, that he's going to find secret riches that have been hidden away so that Cyrus would know that God was real and that the God of Israel was the one that was talking to him. And it's true. History supports this. That's exactly what happened. Cyrus did deliver the Israelites from captivity. He did find riches. He had to dig for them. But the Jews in captivity, before they left, had hid their jewels, their gold, anything that was very valuable to them to keep it from marauders, very much the way our great-grandmothers hid their silverware to keep them from horse thieves or whatever. But that is exactly what happened. And Cyrus found those buried treasures, those actual literal buried treasures. And he became wealthy from that. And because of that wealth, he was able to, with his conquests, fulfill the call that God had on his life. Well, I love history. I love the backstories of the Bible. I love to know that God is a God who not only gave a prophecy, but then actually fulfilled it in the life of this King Cyrus and in the life of his people, the Israelites. But I need to know how that's going to help me today. That night, as I was sitting, flipping through my Bible and flipping through this computer program and stumbled upon this verse, I really didn't care two figs about Cyrus. It didn't matter to me what had happened to that king all those thousands of years ago. It had nothing to do with the darkness I was in. But as I read that verse that night, that God said, I will give you, Kay, treasures of darkness, riches hidden in secret places, so that you may know I am the Lord, the God of Israel, who summons you by name. That had meaning to me. And what that says to me and what it says to us, here's the point. God is able to enrich all of us with spiritual wealth that is stored in unexpected places so that we can fulfill the calling that he has on our lives in exactly the way that he did for Cyrus. Those riches, though, are often hidden in places of darkness. They are hidden in places of suffering, and they are hidden in places we would rather not be. Well, what does this verse tell us about what we can expect from God in dark times? What can you and I expect from God in the darkness that comes to all of our lives in one form or another? Well, let me tell you quickly, and then we'll come back and fill them all in. First, you can expect that God has concealed riches in the suffering of darkness that you go through, in the darkness of suffering. You can expect that. You can know and expect that God has the power to intervene in your darkness, and you can know and expect that God will be close to you in the darkness. So let's look at those each at a time. The first, that you can know and expect that God has concealed riches in the darkness of suffering. He says, I will give you the treasures of darkness, riches hidden in secret places. Job 23:10 is a verse where Job says that God knows the way I take, and when he has tried me, I will come forth as gold. Job says that in the fiery trials of suffering, something really beautiful has the potential to be formed. Gold, riches. It confirms this, that these treasures and riches are gold, are really the blessings in the messes of our lives. These treasures that I'm talking about, these treasures and these secret riches, they are the blessings that you and I find that are hidden in the messes of our lives. They're the unexpected good things that occur in the middle of the horrible, of the terrible, of the catastrophic events and moments we encounter. They are the light that comes in the middle of the darkness. Now, sometimes these treasures, these good things, come in ways that we did nothing for them. They just sort of land in our lap. Many times, though, you and I have to dig for the treasures. You and I are going to have to put forth some effort to find where those riches are, where they are, where those secret places are. They're not going to just fall in our laps. Just the way Cyrus had to dig to find the wealth that had been hidden from him, you and I are going to have to dig. We're going to have to put some effort forth into finding what it is that God has hidden in the mess of our lives. Where are the blessings that are hidden deeply in those messes? You know, I was looking at diamonds and the way that diamonds are mined. I didn't know this, but you have to move 1,750 tons of dirt, 1,750 tons of dirt to come up with 1 carat diamond. That's a lot of dirt. That's a lot of dirt that has to be moved. That's a lot of effort to find even just 1 diamond. And sometimes when our lives are in such extreme darkness, when the suffering is so deep, when the things that we are going through are so painful, the efforts to look for even 1 blessing in that mess is massive. It feels like it takes all the energy we have to find something good hidden in the mess of the brokenness of our lives. But let me give you some examples from the lives of people that I know, many of them lives of people in this church, as they have told me of the treasures in their darkness that they have discovered. There's a widow who told me recently that her husband had remodeled their bedroom right before he died suddenly of a heart attack. They weren't expecting that. He had just done this incredible remodel of their bedroom. And she said, every time I walk into the bedroom now, instead of being overwhelmed with pain and sorrow, she said, I think this is an evidence of how much he loved me. And so every time I walk into this bedroom now, I see it as a treasure in the darkness because I walk in there and I feel loved. Now, you and I would say, well, you know, I don't know that I would look at it that way. I mean, that takes an awful lot of effort. Yes, exactly right. But she's somebody who's decided that she's going to find the buried treasure in the darkness. A young woman whose father took his life a few years ago has said this to me, that knowing that God is taking, it's like she said, I was driving a car and a rock flew up and hit the windshield and shattered the windshield of my life when my dad took his life. And she said, it feels like now that God is taking that shattered windshield of my life and creating a mosaic of my life that brings him glory. A man in our church who's living with HIV has said that he would not trade his physical condition, trade his physical condition for the new purpose that he has to help others who are suffering. That's treasure in darkness. The fact that I've survived breast cancer and melanoma has given me the ability to relate to other people who receive life-threatening diagnosis. That's a treasure in the darkness of cancer. One hidden jewel that at first, if I say it, you might not see it, but let me tell you this. My friend Nancy Guthrie says that one of the hidden treasures that you and I look for in the darkness is emptiness. Now, we do everything we can to avoid feeling empty. Nobody likes to feel empty. But she said it's a hidden treasure in the darkness because when we realize that we are empty, it allows us to come to God and be filled and to find that he is enough for us. And she says in her darkness of losing two children, that's a treasure. One of the dearest treasures for us in our loss that we're going through right now is friends who stick close, those who choose to face the darkness with us. I want to read you, I keep referring to a book, A Grace Disguised by Jerry Sitzer, and I want to read something, it's on the screen, so that you can really catch what it is he's saying about people intentionally choosing to walk through the darkness with those who are suffering. He says, community does not simply happen spontaneously, except in rare occurrences when conditions are right. Not even the unique circumstances of catastrophic loss are sufficient to create community. When people suffering loss do find community, it comes as a result of conscious choices they and other people make. First of all, it requires a choice on the part of those who want to provide community for suffering friends. They must be willing, catch this, because this is an incredibly important point. They must be willing to be changed by someone else's loss, though they may not have been directly affected by it. Good comfort requires empathy, forces adjustment, and sometimes mandates huge sacrifices. Comforters must be prepared to let the pain of another become their own and so let it transform them. They will never be the same after that decision. Their own world will be permanently altered by the presence of one who suffers. They are changed because they chose to get involved and to allow, he's now talking about himself, my suffering to become theirs. They refuse to give me only a month or a year to return to life as it was for me before the loss. He lost his mother, his wife, and his daughter in a car accident. Since they knew life would not be the same for me, they decided that it would not be the same for them either. God has wired us in such a way that we desperately need each other. We need community. We need relationships. We need a place where we feel loved and valued, especially when the hard times hit. But the problem is you and I are good fixers. We are great fixers, and we want to get rid of a problem and then move on. And so we look for projects. We look for things we can do so that we have a sense of accomplishment, so that we have a sense that we've done something concrete. And this idea that you can't fix your friend who's suffering is a hard one for us to deal with. But many of the situations in our lives simply cannot be fixed. They won't be fixed until we get to heaven, because this is earth, not heaven. And in our hurry to fix the problem or fix our friend and then move on, we rush past each other's pain. And we want to give easy answers and simple steps. And instead, we need to be willing to just be with someone in their suffering. For our family, those who are allowing our grief to transform their lives is one of the dearest treasures I'm finding in the darkness. Because the fact is, we will never be the same. And they are deciding to never let their lives be the same either. They are taking on our pain, and they're carrying it with us no matter how long it takes. facing the darkness together is about making a decision. It's not an emotion that hits you out of the blue. To express compassion is a deliberate choice. And we are most like Christ when we choose to offer the gift of our presence and choose to absorb within ourselves the suffering of others. And this is true fellowship. I pray that for all of you who are going through darkness, that there will be people who will allow themselves to be changed by what has changed you. That they will come alongside of you and let what has transformed you transform them. That is the best way we can serve each other as in the body of Christ, is to let others' grief touch us. So this verse says that he gives us treasures in the darkness. I wonder if you would be thinking of some of those treasures as you're going through the darkness that you're experiencing. It may not be the grief and the loss of a loved one. As Rick has been saying, it could be the loss of a job. It could be the loss of a friendship. It could be the loss of your health. It could be the loss of your finances. It can be any loss. But in that darkness, looking for the treasures that are hidden in there. But he says that he gives us treasures in the darkness, riches, so that we would know. Write that down. So that we would know. Let me say it again. So that we would know. He says, I'm giving you these treasures, these riches, so that you would know. And we've been talking throughout this entire series that the way to get through whatever it is you're going through is based on what you know. So let me give you two more things, two more truths that you need to know that will help you get through any darkness that you're experiencing.
Oh, listening friend, what are those two truths you need to know? Well, we'll continue with this Finding Treasure in Darkness by Kay Warren on tomorrow, the Wednesday edition of Markin' Friends. And we'll learn that God has the power to intervene in our darkness and that God will be close to us in our times of darkness, hurt, pain, suffering, when things just don't seem fair. So join us again at the same time tomorrow for the Wednesday edition of Markin' Friends. Now, if you missed a portion of today's broadcast or can't tune in at the same time tomorrow or want to get caught up on the other Tuesday and Wednesdays when we began this series, How to Get Through What You're Going Through, stop by greatnewsradio.org or wluj.org and click on the Markin' Friends tab. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you and have a great day and night.